welcome to season two of That Gabby Roslin podcast, back with more absolutely blooming fantastic guests. I always love chatting to the fabulously funny Josh Whittacombe. We talk about his brilliant book, which is out now, called Watching Neighbours Twice a Day. So we, of course, chat all about the 90s and his love of Jet from Gladiators. Plus, his hilarious podcast, Parenting Help with Rob Beckett, Taskmaster, The Last Leg, and how he feels TV has changed over the years. And really, even just thinking about him makes me laugh. He's brilliant. Enjoy. Please, can I ask you a favour? Would you mind, please, following and subscribing, please, by pressing the follow or subscribe buttons, please? This is completely and utterly free, by the way. And then you can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts, which is the purple app on your iPhone or iPad. Simply scroll down to the bottom of all of the episodes and you'll see the stars where you can tap and rate. And also, please write a review. Thank you so much. How many places was that? Probably too many, but please, thank you. Hello, Josh.
Hello. I'm so sorry. I had 3:30 in my diary.
No, did you actually forget? Go on, be honest.
No, I swear, I wouldn't have been able to turn it around this quickly. I wouldn't. I'd have been 10 minutes away if I'd actually forgotten.
Lovely, Josh.
I was just doing another podcast. I was just doing me and Rob's podcast, and Frankie Bridge was 10 minutes late, and I was like, this is unbelievable. And now I'm the guy that's 10 minutes late. An hour later, I've made the same mistake.
Yes! It's absolutely fine. Listen, we'll wait for you. No problem.
Thank you.
The man who was brought up in Postman Pat land.
Yes, I was. That's me.
Really? Did you really say that?
I think that's a very good description of where I was brought up. I don't know if that's a direct quote. But,
yeah, well, it was from 2015. It said, I think the simplest thing is if you say that I was brought up in Postman Pat land.
I think that's a fair description. I wish I'd remembered I'd said that. I'd have spilled it out a bit more often in the last 5 years.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, mate. Four people in my year at school, village with a post office and a pub, and the post office is now closed down.
Don't say that.
Oh, no, well, don't worry about it.
No, but I find that really sad. I really do. I love the idea. I remember when I was a little girl, which was obviously before you were a little boy, not a little girl, that there was a shop round the corner and we knew the woman that ran it and she was called Katie and she had sweets in jars before it was trendy to have sweets in jars.
Yeah, we had sweets in jars. So you'd get them in a quarter or in, would it be 2 ounces or a quarter? I can't even remember but a quarter was like too many sweets. What would that even be? A quarter of a pound? I don't even know what that'd be.
I suppose so. Of course, yeah. I don't know. There were a lot. And my brother liked one and I liked another. I only liked the fake bananas.
Oh, the foam bananas, yes. They are good. They're really good, mate. You've made a good decision. What did your brother like?
Oh, no, my brother liked the lemon sherbets. I didn't like that.
Do you not? I think I just I was into it all, really. Occasionally, I'd even go for the cough sweet ones, which is madness looking back.
Oh, no.
The cough candies.
Or the Pontefract cakes.
Oh, yeah. God, we've gone back very quickly haven't we?
That's weird. That was nowhere. I wasn't going to go there at all. But, hey, that's why I completely adore you. I was going to obviously go back to the 90s, because we're going to go back to the 90s a lot because of your book. But, do you know, it's so lovely reading about you, all the different things, because you keep yourself to yourself. And through your podcast, which thank you for having me on with you and Rob.
Oh, you were great on it. You were amazing.
I think I might have actually possibly wet myself because I was laughing so
much. It felt like you might break a rib from laughing, which was exactly what we want. That's the spirit you want, isn't it, on a podcast?
But I think also that I personally want that in life. You make me laugh. I've said this to Rob. And you know how much I love Rob for many years.
Yes.
But I like people who've got funny bones. And you're another one who's got funny bones. It's just great to make people laugh.
It's the most fun you can have, right? I don't know. I don't understand people that are kind of... I mean, obviously, we're all serious about things at times. But, like, the best fun you can have is making people laugh, whether that's face-to-face, in your work or, you know, on a WhatsApp group or whatever, they're the people you want to be spending time with, right?
Did you make the other four people in your primary school laugh?
I was a bit of a non-character back in the day. Like, I was a bit more of a big character at primary school because I was, like, you know, big fish and all that.
There's only four of you. There's got to be... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's
you're
barely
all big
a pond.
Fish. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. We were all big fish. But, so I didn't... I was a bit of more of a bigger character at primary school, but at secondary school, I didn't make anyone laugh for 5 years. I just completely disappeared. Just completely...
Really?
Went under the radar.
From shyness or from what, putting your head down and working?
I think it was like, not so much shyness, because it was like I had mates and I'd hang around with my mates and stuff, but just stuff like, I just didn't want attention. I suppose that is shyness to an extent, but not in the way that you can't talk to anyone or anything. But I just fitted in. And the way to fit in was just kind of be as unmemorable as possible. I don't think I was consciously doing this, by the way. I think this is me afterwards going, oh, yeah, that's who you were at secondary school. You were just kind of the kind of extra person. You were the kind of... If they'd done a pointless round about my school, I would have been the pointless answer. Do you know what I mean? I was that one one remembered. Yeah.
But you didn't feel sorry for yourself when you did that?
No, because I still had my mates and stuff. So it wasn't like... Because obviously... Not having mates would have drawn attention to myself. So you're still like, you've got your friends and you've got, but they're middle level social group. Do you know what I mean? On the periphery of that, all the kind of average things.
That's okay. It's funny. It's really weird when people talk about their childhood and being just fitting in or being shy or being average or nothing special, whatever. That's what most people are, aren't they?
Totally.
Really?
I think there's this presumption with comedians that you're either the class clown or you're the person that was bullied and learnt to make people laugh to stop them bullying you. That's the two options you have as an origin story. And people can't believe it's not one of those two if it's not one of those two. But it was just with me. I just really liked comedy and really liked watching comedy and then really liked the process of kind of making it.
So, but you've only... I mean, you're relatively new. I mean, it's such a weird thing. I mean, you've been doing it since 2008, but that's still relatively, I mean, it's 13 years. But there must have been a moment that you said, okay, I'm going to now do this as a job. It did, or did it just happen? Because for some people, you sort of fall into it. But there must have been a moment.
I did a gig. My first gig went well. And it, you know, and then... If that hadn't gone well, I think I'd have quit straight away and I'd have never have gigged again and all that kind of stuff.
No, really?
Yeah, definitely. I'm strongly of the belief that there's I think there's a parallel universe in which loads of people that aren't comedians now who are just as good as us, you know, but just had got unlucky with that first gig, could be huge comedians. And these big comedians that you see on TV, you know, just didn't have the impetus for some reason. A couple of gigs went against them or something. So, in that sense. But I gigged for 2 years on the open mic circuit. I came out of a long-term relationship about a year into that. And by that point, I was like, well, I've got nothing else to do now. It's like I'm in for a penny, in for a pound, I suppose. So maybe at that point was when I kind of went, this is what I'm going to do.
It's quite a... It is a gamble. And I mean, I love it as a gamble, but... But and I said to all the comedians that we had on the last season and also on this, and so Tom recently, your Tom Allen and your Tom Allen.
You're Tom Allen.
but everybody who says this, it's that thing about standing up on stage and if a joke doesn't work, still believing in yourself enough, or a story doesn't work, believing in yourself enough to say, okay, I'm just going to try again. That would just, inside, my stomach just goes into knots, the thought of doing stand-up. Whoa.
That's mad, because you do live TV and radio, right?
That's fine.
No, it's not. That's terrifying, right?
No, not at all. There's nothing greater. But that's all the comedians I know, from Alistair McGowan to Rob and you and Alan and all the rest. I don't know how you can stand up there and peddle your wares brilliantly as you all do, and then not get a laugh, and then be able to go on the next night.
Would one laugh, would one failed joke have killed Gabby Roslin's stand-up career?
No, it wouldn't, but it's fascinating how you guys keep going. I don't do jokes. I just fall over. As you know, my favourite thing is if anybody falls. If you fall over, then I'm happy and I'll wet myself laughing. But for a stand-up, I just think there's a real brave. I think you have to be very brave.
I think obviously you desensitise to anything. So I filmed a thing recently with a woman who'd done, she was like a kind of Guinness World Record holding skydiver. She'd done 4,000 skydives or whatever in her career. And we had to go up in a plane and I was utterly terrified. And she was literally loving it. And I just thought, I spend my life being told that I've got a brave job. And I can't even go up in a plane. Do you know what I mean? I am the biggest weed you've ever met, Gab. I didn't climb trees as a child. I was too scared to climb trees. I don't like confrontation of any sort. I am absolutely... I live my life in fear, apart from, for some reason, when I'm doing Mock the Week or whatever, when I'm fine. Wow. Why is that? I don't know.
Because that's you. That's, that. Like I said, you've got it in your bones.
Yeah. And I enjoy it. And also, it gets easier. It gets easier, right? So, you know, you talk about going on and jokes going badly. By the time you're on tour, you're playing to 1,000 people that have all paid to see you. And you're doing stuff that you've done enough times that you know it works. Everything works by that point, generally. It's most galling in those first 2 years where you're the worst you are at the job doing the toughest gigs. I was doing gigs to, like, two people. I did a gig to two people, and they were on a date. And
I don't believe it. Are you exaggerating? Yeah. Or you really mean
I'm
it?
I'm not exaggerating. That's true. It was above a pub in Camden. They're on a date. There's 15 acts, and just two people on a date sat there. And you're like, this is horrible.
Oh, my
everyone goodness. Involved. One of the comics had driven from Cardiff to do the gig, and you're like,
oh, no.
What a life this is.
Is
what
he
have
still
we chosen
doing it?
Here?
Is he still doing it, that Cardiff guy?
I think he is. I think he's professional in Germany, strangely.
In Germany?
Oh. Yeah.
There's so many things I want to say about that, but I probably should have. I really shouldn't. Different sense of humour springs to mind, but there we go.
Yes, yes.
But all the stuff, because you were saying about me, so you do live telly, you do game shows, you do sitcoms, and for me, maybe I'm completely wrong, but the way I read it with you is that you jump in with both feet. And there you were saying, going up in an aeroplane, the idea of jumping out of a plane absolutely terrifies you. But all of these other things, am I right in thinking you jump in with both feet with open arms?
Yeah, but do you know what? If something goes badly, I don't do it again. So,
really?
So, people will go, oh, that went badly. I want to do that show again to show I can do it. Absolutely not. No, thank you. Did badly on Nevermind the Buzzcocks. Thank you very much. I can't do that show. I'll move on. Dealt with. Never doing that again.
Yeah,
which
like
is
that.
Weird. And it's completely
that.
Different
no,
hosting
that.
Stuff now. But I'm like, oh, I'll just write that bit of my life off. I don't need to prove that to anyone. So if something goes badly, I'm done with it.
What if it's a huge success? Would you go back and do it again? It's like a, you know, if you had a hit album and it goes straight to number one and it sells millions around the world, would you go back and do album number two or would you go, thank you very much, I've done the album?
Oh, that's a good question, Gabby, which obviously will never happen. But the question, no, well, that's an interesting one in terms of like I love quizzes, right? So I love quizzes on TV. I did Pointless and we won Pointless and... I've been asked to do that again, and I'm absolutely not doing that. I'm quitting while I'm ahead with that one.
There we go.
Yeah. Taskmaster.
But you did it
well.
With Taskmaster because you won, and then you were the champion of champions with Greg's name tattooed on.
I know,
have you still got
so
that? Is that a real tattoo?
Yeah, that is a real tattoo, yeah. Yeah.
Have you still got it?
Because I don't know. Wow. It's quite weird with my daughter because she obviously can't read.
And she's not called Greg.
She's 3.5. She's not called Greg. Oh, we had to call her Greg. The only
what
way
about your new
it?
Baby? Did you could have called your new baby boy Greg?
Greg, yeah. I mean, you don't get many Gregs at baby age these days, do you?
Yeah, but he was a baby once.
Was he? Have you seen him?
Not. He's too big to have been a baby. You're right.
I don't know if he was a baby once.
No, you're right. You're right. But Taskmaster, you did go back and do, and you won again. You became the champion of champions.
I did champion of champions, but I would not do that again now. That's it. I'm done. If they're doing another champion of champions for the next 5 series. So if they did 25 series, they'd have 5 champion of champions.
Will.
They could do champion of champion of champions. I wouldn't do champion of champion of champions. I don't know whether any of these sentences are making sense to the listeners.
No,
anymore,
I completely,
but I know what I mean.
Understood. Do you know, it's the one thing that you do that I wish they wouldn't just have comedians. I would love to do Taskmaster. Every time I watch it, I think that is the best fun.
It's a gift. It's such a joy. It's nerve-wracking opening the envelope because you don't know what you're going to be made to do or asked to do, should I say. But that's nerve-wracking. But it's like, I remember like Sarah Pascoe described it to me as like, it's like your treat for doing all the shows that are really tough. Do you know what I mean? Is you get to do Taskmaster. That's your treat. Is you get to play Alex Horn's weird little game. And that's, it's so much fun. Never again.
Never. Yeah, I'm going to remind you about when they've done the 25 and it's the champ, whatever you just said.
Well, the thing is, Gabby, as well, once it comes to 25, my career might be in a position where I really need that gig. So,
no, but then you'll be going on I'm a Celebrity.
Oh, I don't know if I do that. I'm vegetarian, Gabby. It would make it very difficult in the Bush Tucker trials.
Didn't you work on Dora the Explorer magazine?
Yeah, yeah.
See? You're ready to be an explorer. You could do the jungle.
There's a slight... Yeah, there is a link. I would say I did work on Dora the Explorer mainly from the position of a desk in West London rather than trekking through the jungle. Sorry to break your heart on that, Gabby.
Oh, well.
I know.
Oh,
I don't know how you envisage publishing. Yeah. It's not how you believe it. Yeah, that was like the first job I had when I came to London.
But what did you did work on Dora the Explorer magazine, but obviously you didn't explore, but you also worked on football magazines. So I know you've got the football podcast and you did football radio as well. And now this is another thing that I found
out about you. You speak in the manner of someone I'm going to guess isn't a huge football fan.
How did you know?
Because I've never heard the phrase football radio before.
Okay, on radio you talked about football. How's that? Okay, yeah, no.
I'm not judging
you
for not being into football.
No, I'm not. I'm not a fan. I don't know much about football. All I know is that my husband supports Chelsea and he plays football still twice a week. He does 7-a-side and he loves it and it brings him joy. And
that's enough.
That was enough for me.
Yeah.
Did you watch England in the Euros? I did. I really did. I watched England and your mate Rob. Rob gave me tremendous amount of joy throughout. He even texted me late at night on one of them.
Did he?
It was very sweet. I think he said it was something like, I can't remember what I texted you. And he hadn't texted me. So that was fine.
Became England's unofficial mascot for the tournament, didn't he?
Really did. But I have to say, I loved it. I was heartbroken by the reaction of the a few of the fans. I was disgusted because I remember walking through London on my way to work, and I was walking through London, and I went live on the radio when I arrived at work and said, wow, I haven't seen London like this since the 2012 Olympics. There was joy. Everybody of every age, every colour, every religion, everything, all arm in arm, or as they could be, obviously, in COVID. And they had their England shirts and kids were laughing. It was a joy. And then cut to 4 days later and the abhorrent behaviour of those people towards those incredible footballers just sickened me.
Couldn't agree. I'd say that is the perfect description of the summer we went through. I thought it felt like a uniting event up until the end. It felt like a uniting event after the kind of almost the country needed after the 18 months it's had before. Yeah. And I thought, you know, from Gareth Southgate to all of the squad, they're kind of the kind of people we needed to bring us together. And then obviously, not
what
quite,
a gent.
But what a man. Yeah. What a human being he is.
See, I can talk football a little bit.
You can. Do you know
a
what?
Little.
Do you know what? You summed it up far better than people that are paid to talk about football.
I don't know if my husband would agree with you, but thank you. Bless you, Josh.
I would still be disappointed if I turned on Match of the Day and you were one of the pundits, though, Gabby.
Yeah, they expect
clear.
The other Gabby, not me. It's the other
yes,
Gabby.
Yes, yeah,
yeah. It'd exactly. be very confusing. Although I do get lots of messages, people saying, why did you say that? And I like your blue jacket. I think, that's great. I'm sitting here watching an 80s film. I don't know how they know what I'm wearing. And there's certainly no football in it. Can we talk about last leg
Is she getting
as
questions
well?
Going? Is yeah. she getting texts going, yes, I loved your motor mouth? Is
she that- does. She does. We're going to get to 90s. Don't worry. We're going to get to 90s.
Sorry. No, no, no.
TV.
Sorry. Yeah.
No,
last
we are.
Leg, I'd love to talk about Last Leg.
We are. No, we are. Yeah, Last Leg. That works. I know this is a really weird phrase. And I was thinking about Last Leg. And I just thought, it works. The three of you are a complete and utter delight. Each of you are honestly a delight. You've naughty humour. You all have, which I always call that twinkle, but yes. it just works. And I think that's, I mean that with my arms around all three of you. I'll say it again. I'm boring myself, but it just works, doesn't it?
But I think that's what it is. I think it started out that first series in 2012. People loved it because it kind of spoke about disability in a way it had never been spoken about before, which obviously is, I take no credit for, obviously Adam and Alex are kind of leading the charge on that. And it also captured a moment when it was the Paralympics cut through and everyone was on this high. And I think since then, when we've had to talk about, you know, possibly 7 years of utterly depressing news, it's become not about the news, but it's become about the relationship between the three of us.
Mm.
And it's become, you know, it's almost like a sitcom in that sense. Do you know what I mean? You've all got the regular character. We're all different characters and all different people. And, you know, maybe how we'd react to different situations and stuff like that. And we all make each other laugh. And that I think that's very rare in a show where we were put together, but we've got the chemistry of friends, if you know what I mean.
So you and Rob obviously get on fantastically. You and James in Hypothetical, another show. In fact, I suddenly realised I am a super fan. This is very embarrassing.
Thank you, Gavin.
But Hypothetical as well. That work. Oh, it's just great. Oh, and how it works. But it is about relationship. All of those are all about relationships. And actually, let's go to your book. Congratulations on your book. Wow, watching Neighbours twice a day. You and I could talk 90s television till the cows come home. I'm very lucky to have been a part of that time.
Central to it, I'd say.
No. But you look back and you can see those relationships that absolutely and utterly worked. And I really do put you three on the last leg, but also you and Rob. I want you and Rob to do more together. I really do. It works.
Do you know what this is interesting about this? Is like, you get a lot of kind of TV people that are like, oh, how would we do the podcast as a TV show or whatever? And you go, what I love about it is that it's a podcast. Do you know what I mean?
And I love
how
I agree.
Free it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love how we get to say whatever we want to say within legal reason, obviously. We get to record, you know, it's just us and Michael, the producer, and we've kind of created this thing. And there's a huge freedom. I don't know if you find that with this, that you just go,
yeah, completely.
Podcasts are just the most, I just adore the freedom of doing it. It's so much fun. And you go, I'm just going to go upstairs 45 minutes and have a laugh with my mate. And that's what I'm going to call work today. I don't have to drive into the BBC. So I'd love to do other stuff with Rob.
I mean other stuff.
I don't mean your
podcast.
Yeah.
No, I mean other stuff. Because I love, totally. Obviously, we all love him with Romesh. And I love you, like I said, I love you with James. But I just think there's something, and I know you've done other stuff on telly with Rob, but I just think it works. The relationship, I'm really boring myself. I keep saying it works.
No, not at all. I think it's really interesting.
But then when you look at some relationships, they don't necessarily, and you do feel that it's been put together. And I know you said that about Last Leg, and that now you guys are all mates and you get on and you know each other's sense of humour. But sometimes it doesn't work. And in 90s television, there were some incredible... I mean, you think about The Word, that was a show and a half. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, that was a that was an intense... I mean, that was a very different... I don't think you'd get The Word on television now, would you?
No.
That was kind of the most, kind of the purest 90s TV show in a way, wasn't it? And it was just took it to the kind of nth degree. It was a really like, but the first like exposure I had to that kind of show was when I watched The Big Breakfast, which was a similar type of zoo TV or whatever you call it a show. I'd have been, 92 would that be? So I'd be 9. And I turned that on and I was like, what the F is going on? This is like something I've never seen before in my life. And it's
did you
on
say at 9 what the F is going on? At 9. You knew there was a swear word, but you just used F. I love that. 9-year-old with 4 people in your class.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, my gran doesn't need to hear me say fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, I know, but like, that was the first exposure I had that TV could be like that. Do you know what I mean? That you could see the floor manager, not that I knew what a floor manager was, or you could see the crew, that it could go wrong and a man could fall off a chair and it could stay in the show because it's live and it could all go, you know, that's the thrill of it, right? And yeah. That was the first experience I had of that kind of show. And also, it was in the morning, so it was like, what? I don't understand what's happening here. It blew my mind, really. Mark Lamar on a doorstep, and then like you and Chris Evans bantering with the news guy before he did the headlines, and then someone's in a pool on a tea bag trying to get a sugar lump or whatever. It was like crazy.
It was tremendous fun. But the 90s were the TV of the 90s. And you know, you're saying about watching, you know, because it's called about Neighbours, watching Neighbours twice a day. But TV really, really moulded you, didn't it? I mean, you got so much from television.
I think I lived in Devon, nothing happened. And I just kind of watched... I spent my childhood watching television, and that's how I experienced the world. It was really weird in that sense, like so much of my memories.
I did too.
Yeah. And your memories are television shows in a way, and also a childhood, but like television is so central to it. And it kind of, that's how I related to the world, and that's how I understood everything, and that's how I received all of my information, because there was no other, you know, I wasn't reading a newspaper, and I didn't have, and the internet didn't exist, or it did, but it was rubbish for the second half of the 90s. And so, you know, no one was actually going on the internet until about 2003, unless they were a real nerd. And I was a real nerd, but not that much of a nerd. But it was everything to you. And it was central to your experience of life, because it was like everyone watched Neighbours at my school. And then the next day, everyone talked about Neighbours. And if you hadn't watched Neighbours, you were effed, to use the terminology that I would have used at the age of 9.
Yes.
You were absolutely effed. You were, but like, it was so central to my life. It's mad to think of it now. I didn't realise at the time.
No, I don't think it is mad. What else was, so Neighbours, and you went into school to talk about it, and thank you for mentioning The Big Breakfast. That's very sweet that you remember it. But what other shows were real sort of core to your learning?
Gladiators was a big deal for me. I loved Gladiators. And what's kind of weird now is obviously my job, and you get to meet most famous people at some point or another. And the people that make me most excited are like when you meet Jet from Gladiators or something, and you're like, oh, I've met like, you know, film stars through the last leg. I've been on Graham Norton with Tina Fey or whatever. Or,
wow.
You know, Ed Sheeran. I did not react to them like I reacted when I met Jet from Gladiators. it's mad. Like, these are the people that really, like, blow my mind and excite me. We had... So, for the podcast this week, we had... that I do with Rob. We had Pat Sharp, right, as our guest. People are going mad for it. There's something about those people like Pat Sharp or Jet from Gladiators that, for my generation, they mean so much more to them than if you'd got, you know, I don't know, Noel Gallagher on or something. Do you know what I mean? There's something about these people.
That's very interesting. Because Neil Buchanan,
we wouldn't say no to Noel Gallagher, obviously. Let's just be very clear on that if he's listening.
Yeah. Of course, he listens to this. but Neil Buchanan, who, because you asked me to, so I messaged Neil Buchanan, Mr. Art Attack. But when I mentioned Neil's name to you when I was on your podcast, your reaction was so incredible. You couldn't believe that I knew Neil Buchanan. And then I messaged him and then we spoke to each other and he thought I was taking the piss. I went, no, I'm really... He went, Josh Widdicombe. I went, yes. He went, don't be ridiculous. I went, no, I'm honestly telling you, he couldn't believe that you and me were still mates and that I knew Mr. Art Attack and Mr. Motormouth. And he just, honestly, he was like, no, not Josh Widdicombe. I went, yes. And you're not taking the piss. You actually really don't feel like this about all these people.
Yeah, of course. Because these people were central to my life growing up. These people were so important. And that's the point at which you're so, not suggestible, that's the wrong word. But, you know, your memories as a child are so much more vivid, so much more powerful. The emotions you feel are so much more powerful. No one's actually that excited about meeting a musician that they've loved since they were 30. Do you know what I mean? But they are excited about meeting someone that was on TV when they were 10. Because that's when the person on TV felt otherworldly and they felt kind of from a completely different fantasy world where, you know, Neil Buchanan was making a picture of the Queen from old laundry that was 4 miles long, do you know what I mean, or whatever.
Listen, you're talking, you know, I was exactly the same when I met the presenters of Blue Peter. I remember meeting Michael Aspel. I honestly, because he was on telly when I was a child, and it was that and Donny Osmond. And people always say, who are the people you're most excited about meeting? And probably in my mind, it would be the Blue Peter presenters and Donny Osmond, because they were on my telly and I lived everything. Television was my world, like it was for you. So I get that. I completely get your love of it. But I'm going to throw in something here, which it does sound a bit heavy, but I've been quite outspoken about it. But do you think that TV today is too safe compared to what it was like?
I don't know. In the sense of, I can totally see.
It is. Naughty on television.
Gabby, I think you've just answered your own question.
Yeah, I have. I want to know from you. I'm sorry. I just can't believe you're going to say it's not too safe.
No. I tell you what I miss is I do miss that what you want is that feeling that anything could happen. And I miss that.
Yes. Yeah?
And I don't think you get that as much as... Like, when you watch something like TFI Friday, it is astonishing how kind of... skin, whether this is, you know, how much of it's put upon for the show, but it's astonishing how skin of the teeth, how many mad things they were doing, how many kind of strange kind of, you know, risks they were taking. That's amazing and that's exciting. I don't think you'd have that anymore. And I think that's a real shame. And I think that's why people would gravitate towards a podcast, or they would gravitate towards stuff that people make themselves on the internet and stuff, because it's beholden to less, you know, things. It's not need when you're doing a podcast. Well, you do have adverts, but you're not really thinking about the advertisers. Do you know what I mean? You're not worrying about the financing of the show and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of, I think there's more ways now that you can get that stuff that you're maybe looking for from TV, you were getting from TV in the 90s, that now is maybe coming from other areas, if you want to find that.
That's very interesting. I mean, I think Last Leg takes risks.
It does. It definitely takes risks. But also, I think it would be a lot easier for us to book it if we weren't taking as many risks and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? I think... it's very difficult to book big movie stars and stuff for Last Leg, I think, because of it's live. You might have to talk about Donald Trump. Well, not now, but obviously. But you might again. You know, there's all these things that maybe now just people wouldn't touch with a barge pole because the PR would just go, the juice isn't worth the squeeze on that one, which I think is a real shame.
So maybe it comes down to that then. Maybe it comes down to the readily available social media and the speed at which people have an opinion on something.
The amount of things that happen in 90s TV or 2000s TV that, you know, up to about 2012, that would have just got completely lost. You know, you feel like people are watching TV shows and they're on Twitter at the same time. Do you know what I mean? There's this instant reaction, which is such a bad way to watch a TV show.
I bet you've done it though.
Yeah, but I try. I don't barely look at Twitter now because I just find it rots my brain. I find it a really negative thing. And so I don't like, I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't want to watch TV show along with other people on Twitter. But then I can see the appeal. You know, it's like watching TV with your mates. And the one thing TV was in the 90s that it's not now was a communal experience.
Yes.
Like, everyone watched the same stuff at the same time and talked about it the next day. Now, if everyone's watching, you know, the same thing, it's usually Netflix. It'll be The Last Dance or something. And then you can't even talk about it because everyone's at different points in it. So someone's at episode 4, you're at episode 2. You don't want to hear what they've got to say because they're going to give it away. So it's like TV couldn't be less communal now. I think that's, for me, the real shame compared to what it was like in the 90s.
Oh, I agree. I completely... In fact, I'll just agree with everything you say. I'll say it now so I don't have to say I agree with you. Sitting down and writing a book, and I can imagine that obviously because... Okay, your wife was pregnant and you've got, as you say, you've only got a three-month-old baby and no sleep and everything. But writing a book was... I presume you did this quite a while ago.
It was kind of during lockdown, yeah.
So how did you choose what to put in it? Because somebody who was so deeply entrenched in the 90s and television, and also your life, because it's about your life as well. It's not
kind
just
of like a parallel story of growing up in the 90s, told through the TV shows that I loved, really, I suppose.
And that's why it works. It is fantastic. It's the rule that everyone has to go and buy it because it's just so good. But
I'd love to agree with you on that.
Did you choose what you were going to put in it? Because to me, there's another few books, surely, to come out of
it. Well, I wanted to... I just started. I didn't have a narrative in... I was just like, I'm going to just start by writing about... thing. I think the first thing I wrote was Neighbours because I was like, that feels like a good start. And then I just slowly amassed the chapters together. There was things where I was like, I really want to write about this and these things I have to write about. Neighbours. Ghostwatch I felt like was a big deal to me in my childhood, that one-off thing with the haunting. What were the other... Gladiators, Noel's House Party, all these things that I felt. And then I was just like, what else kind of do I need to... has to hit to tell the story of what life was like from 1990 to 1999 and that kind of decade. And there's loads of things, like, it's not like I've gone, what were the 20 biggest TV shows? I don't do Friends. I don't talk about Friends because I feel like, I don't really feel like Friends is part of the 90s. Do you know what I mean? It feels like it's just kind of transcended that completely. So I don't do big shows like that, and there's some others that I talk about that are only important to me, but I wanted it to be my personal journey from the age of kind of 7 to the age of 17 or whatever it would be, and that is what it is, actually. I can do the maths, and I don't know why so I just chose a combination of everything that I felt was important and everything that was important to me, because I don't think I wouldn't describe this as a definitive history of what it was like to live in the 90s for everyone, but it's definitely a sum up of my experience of 10 years. And the people that have read it, who are kind of my age, have kind of gone, yes, that is exactly what my childhood was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a responsibility then, isn't it? You're speaking for everybody. or for many.
I just think, like, it was so central to our lives, like television. So things were getting like 15, 20 million viewers. Everyone was watching these things. So everyone was living these same existences in different houses around the country, really, I think. And so it was, apart from obviously those few kids that didn't have a TV, who were parents, just read books with them. Poor bastards.
I've suddenly remembered an anecdote about Blind Date was in the 90s. Did carry on in the 90s. It was 90s.
Yeah, that did carry on in the 90s. Yeah, it was kind of 80s, 90s.
And I remember some event and I said something about Blind Date. And all these people go, right, I've never watched it, don't watch it. Did you see the time that that woman fell over? Yeah. Did you see the time? Go, hold on, you just said you didn't watch it. Oh, it might have been on in the background. Yeah. There was that wonderful thing about everybody watching, you know, 25, as you say, 20, 25 million people were watching it on a Saturday night before they went out. And nobody would admit they watched it, but still 20 million people were doing so. It's
totally
the same.
It's like Beadle's About or something. Everyone claimed to hate Jeremy Beadle. Yeah, he was the most popular television presenter in the world, do you know, in Britain. Like, do you know, and it's like, but the reason was there was four channels. Do you know what I mean? And you wanted the TV to be on because you didn't have a phone to look at. So the TV was on in the evenings. And if you hated Jeremy Beadle, you probably... He was still more entertaining than the other three things, so you might as well watch him. What else are you going to do? Stare at the wall. Do you know what I mean? There was, it's literally that kind of situation where the TV was so central to our lives.
Is it
and
like
you
that
watched
with your
it.
Daughter?
Now you watch... You what, sorry?
I just want to know if you're like that with your daughter. Do you let your daughter watch as much television as you did? Or are you stricter?
She's not as into it as I was. I'm not limiting her time on screen, screen time. But that's because we haven't got in a position where we've needed to. Do you know what I mean? But she's, you know, I don't know. When I'm hungover or something, and I, or like a bad parenting day, it's like me pushing the TV on her, and she's like, no, I want to go and play. You're like, oh, come on, mate. Let's just watch some Mr. Tumble. Give me a break here. Come on. I need this. I just need to sit down. Just give me half an hour of Tumble. Come on, mate.
Oh, I'm with you. I remember doing that with my eldest. She's now just turned 20. But I remember it was sort of 6 in the evening and it would just be that time you just think, oh, come on, just watch telly. Just sit in front of the telly.
Like, come on, mate.
People were disgusted when I said that.
I know. If anything, like, I'm pushing TV on my daughter rather than the other way around, which is... Just one more episode of Sarah and Duck and then we'll go out. Go on. Just give me that, please. It's 9 minutes. Oh. You can watch it for 9 minutes.
So how's the baby? How is it being having a baby back in...
It's tough, mate.
It is, isn't it?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's so tough.
No sleep and
like,
then the teething.
I mean,
can
you hear my daughter screaming there?
No, I didn't. Oh, I can hear... Is she there? Is that her there?
Well, my daughter's just woken up from a nap and she's been screaming for about... The last 20 minutes I've done with the vague screaming in the distance. And I've thought, I'm sure Gabby can't hear this because she'd have mentioned
it. No, we can't. We can't.
That's good. So, it's just... Having two is relentless. I mean, everyone told me, but I didn't listen. I genuinely thought... I was like, that first 2 or 3 months would just be like... When my daughter's at nursery, we'll just sit in front of the TV and relax, really, won't we? And, like, watch the Olympics and stuff. And you're like, no, this is... God. I mean, the only good thing about it, as opposed to the first one in terms of just the ease, is at least I had already lost my social life. So I've got none of that is lost again. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no moment where I've gone like, oh... Like, the first time you have a child, you're like, oh, my God, this is my Saturday night now. Oh, my Saturday night is trying to get a child to sleep. But now, I don't even remember what I'm trying to miss from Saturday nights. So that's good. But it's pretty intense. But he started sleeping in the last week. He started to sleep a bit more. But not
in
a way
where... And then
he'll
wake up. He'll wake up because he'll be teething. And then you'll have it all over again. Yeah.
Oh, God,
You'll remember it.
People talk about the 4-month sleep regression. You're like, what am I... Really? I wish it was a bit more linear. Do you know what I mean? Because just when you think you've got a handle on it, that's when it goes wrong. But conversely, just when you think it's awful, something nice will happen and it will make you go, oh, this is worth it.
But it's great that you speak like this. My producer that I'm working with at the moment, he's got exactly the same age kids as yours. And he just, this morning when I went in, and he just went, oh, mate, please. Why does nobody tell you having two? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I slammed the freezer door and it broke because I just, I can't. And I said, yeah, no, yeah. And it doesn't get easier because of the teething. And he said, but why did people not say this? And I said, you've got to listen to Rob and Josh. You just got to because they said
It's too late for him. But this is the thing with it. It is going to be worth it because I do want to have siblings.
It is worth it. I promise.
I am not, and I repeat this, having a third. There is no way. No way.
Does your wife know this?
Yes, she agrees with me. But then, you know, you'll get a smile off the baby and you'll be like, well, maybe one more. And they're like, no. God, you've got to... I need to write notes to my phone, to myself in my phone or something at the 3 a.m. moments and go, you have to remember this is happening.
Okay, so somebody who's 2 and they're 20 and 14 now, what I'm going to do... It's, I'm just going to remind you every so often. I'm going to WhatsApp you. Maybe in about 6 months, I'm just going to send you a random WhatsApp, just saying no, don't. Just saying no, don't.
Do you know and you'll think,
what is she talking about? And then I'll say, I promise it gets easier.
I just hope because my daughter, she wakes up very badly from naps. So this is my 3-year-old. She's been screaming for 20 minutes, right? This shouldn't be happening during an interview. This isn't professional for me.
It should be. That's why podcast.
Never on Parkinson was the guest also listening to their child screaming in a floor below them. Do you know what I mean? That is not how you're producing your best work. That you're just like, this is not conducive to the working environment.
That's you. And that's why everybody loves you. That's it. Full stop. End of. I mean, that's exactly why. Because
people enjoy my suffering.
Yeah, completely. They love it. They love that you're not sleeping, that your daughter is screaming when she comes out of a nap, and that she's crying in the background. That's how it should be. So we ask everybody on this podcast what makes them properly belly laugh. And you said there's not been much laughing for the past 12 weeks, but you love a giggle. So apart from Rob on your podcast, what makes you properly belly laugh and lose it and giggle?
Well, do you know what? I've kind of got you get in these, this sounds a weird thing to be really into, but like WhatsApp groups with friends where they build and build where it started for some reason and then the conversation continues for years and there's strings of in-jokes that I don't know if other people have this, but where, you know, things will happen in the group or whatever. People have jokes attached to them, whatever. And these jokes have gone on for years and it builds and builds and the longer it goes on. And I'll get texts and WhatsApps on these groups and I'll be so excited because it's like far funnier than anything you see on television. It's far funnier than anything you hear on the radio or on a podcast or whatever. Because often it'll be, you know, you'll be in a group with comedians or whatever. And it's like, it's just so much more extreme. And it's based on like... 6 years acquired to get the jokes, you have to have been in there and read every text for 6 years. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, this is really rewarding. Do you know what I mean? It's how some people feel about reading a great novel or whatever. But you're in a WhatsApp group, you're like, I've really worked for this to understand that joke that references three other jokes in the last 6 years. And that kind of stuff, I absolutely live for. Because I think that's like so much human connection now. You can, while we're blocked off from each other, there are things where you're like, I'm far more in touch with my friends than I would have been before my phone. Do you know what I mean? And I find that really rewarding. So occasionally, my child will be struggling to get to sleep and it'll be my wife's turn to rock him. And I'll look at my phone and I'll be thinking, I can't laugh in this situation because it's 3 a.m. and I've told her that I'm checking the train times for tomorrow or whatever. And you just want to, I adore that. And then, you know, I don't think you ever laugh as much at something that's written or on TV or anything as you do in real life, do you? Do you know what I mean? I think, as you say, you're into people falling over. I think people messing up in real life is far funnier than, you know, not to go back to WhatsApp, but someone sending the wrong text to a group or someone, you know, getting an email that you shouldn't, that someone is meant to send for their wife and it's got the wrong, all of that, you know. Like, I literally just got a text about an hour ago about this birthday party that we're organising for my daughter. And it was like, it was from a mum that I've never met before. And then she called me babe. And then she texted me a minute later and said, I didn't mean to call you babe. And I thought, she's just had an absolute nightmare. And I'm so delighted. And that's made me so happy.
And have you ever said that to someone? You must have. Bank manager. I said to my... To my accountant, that was it. I said to my accountant at the end of the phone call, oh, I'm embarrassed. I said, love you. And then I realised I said it.
Totally. No. Do you know what? When I was at university, I got an email, not an email, a text from my flatmate who, it was like 11 in the morning and his girlfriend had just left. And it was for his girlfriend and I can still remember it word for word. And it was... absolutely effing mortifying. It was just wanted to give you, he'd obviously called her, she hadn't picked up, so he'd written just wanted to give you a snuggle call, hope you're having a snunky time. Monker loves monkey. And I thought, that is the most mortifying thing you could ever send to your flatmate rather than to your girlfriend. Like, so sickening, so much sickening kind of chat, all these secret words they've got together, all this kind of this window into the, do you know what, we never mentioned it, me and the flat. I was too mortified to even bring it out. I was too embarrassed for him, but obviously I've committed it to memory for podcasts in the future.
Oh, that is just fantastic. Yeah, all of those things. Do you know what, can I just add though, that something that makes me laugh is you. And I'm going to end where we started. You've got funny bones. And thank you for bringing us all such joy, especially over the past couple of years, because we've all needed it. And when people, I have to say that when people talk about what makes them laugh, so often people talk about you. So on behalf of all of them, I feel very royal. I'm thanking you on behalf of the people.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Gabby. I've always been a big fan, and it's a pleasure.
You're just lovely.
I follow you on Instagram, and you're having the best time of anyone I follow. You seem to be enjoying life far more than anyone I've ever met. And
Do you know what? It's just being stupid, and I don't care who thinks I'm stupid. And if somebody says, "God, you're really stupid," I go, "Yeah, that's me."
It's more fun. Do you know what? Being silly is just so much better than being serious.
It really is. And thank you for
And I'm off to tell my daughter that story while she screams at me in the face.
Yeah, go and put it in front of the telly quickly. Put it in front of the telly. It's fine. Get an old show out. Put it on. It'll be fine. Josh, congratulations on the book as well. And
thank you so much.
You've got a tour. You've got the tour.
I have got a tour. I forgot about that.
You're touring, you're doing gigs and you're doing a book tour. So I love it on your website. It says, don't get the sort of, this is the book tour. So don't be disappointed if it's not the standard.
Don't be disappointed if it isn't as funny as the normal tour.
It will be.
But it will, you know.
It will be because it's your bones, your funny bones. Thank you, my lovely. Get to your kids.
Thank you.
And bless you. And I will see you in real life soon.
Cheers, mate. Always a pleasure.
Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Speak soon. Bye.
Next week, I'm so excited to chat to the talented actor Lucifer himself from the hugely successful Netflix show Lucifer. It's Tom Ellis. That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly produced by Cameo Productions. Music by Beth Macari. Could you please tap the follow or subscribe button? And thanks so much for your amazing reviews. We honestly read every single one and they mean the world to us. Thank you so much.